Special funding for the podcast of On Point is provided by Boston University School of Law, dedicated to excellence in teaching and to preparing lawyers for global challenges.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In Flint, Michigan, and Far, Texas, more than a third of the population is on food stamps. Big cities like Miami, Chicago, lead the nation in inequality. Smaller cities, Bend, Oregon, Yuma, Arizona, have seen some of the highest leaps in unemployment in the country. The recession has been tough all over and very tough on cities, and they're often minority populations. This hour, On Point, we'll talk with two young black city mayors from Newark, New Jersey, and Washington, D.C., about navigating the storm of this deep recession. Joining me now from Newark, New Jersey, is Cory Booker. He was elected mayor of Newark in 2006 at 37. Newark has long had a reputation as one of the toughest urban challenges in the country. Cory Booker's been trying to turn that around lately in a huge recession. Mayor Booker, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you, Tom, for having me.
You've got big ambitions for a city that's seen more than its share of troubles. What's it been like to do it? And I see your goal here, your mission, a quote, to set a national standard for urban transformation. What's it been like to do that in the teeth of this monster recession?
Well, you know, people are hurting all over our country, and they certainly are in the city of Newark. We've seen foreclosures go up over three times. We've seen our unemployment raise. While it's risen a less percentage than the nation has, it was already high to begin with. So now we're looking at about a 14% unemployment rate. So this is very, very difficult for residents and families here. But I think the greater the challenge, the greater it is to our test of vision and imagination. And we've been able to do a lot of creative things that in many ways have created models that other people are looking at around the country for meeting these challenges.
Tell us what it was like to come into office in, 06, when the economy, you know, at least on the surface, and a lot of activity still humming along, and then to hit this collapse, really, a year ago, and go into the kind of unemployment we've seen and all the rest. How's it changed the environment for trying to lead a city like Newark?
Well, the best metaphor I can give you, it was like running on an Olympic track and being Usain Bolt to suddenly running on the beach and being like I am now, a 40-year-old, a slightly out-of-shape individual. You know, we had momentum, and Newark naturally has a lot of momentum. We're still the second fastest growing city in the Northeast in terms of population. Businesses are still moving back, but everything is slowed down now. So our development projects, we knew we would have cranes in the air in 2008 on a new hotel, on a new downtown tower. But all of that now has just slowed. Projects have been put off. Some of the big box retail told us they're just going to hold for another year before they make their move to Newark. So it's just very frustrating that things are getting a lot harder to do. But again, in this space was a tremendous opportunity for us to step up. A great example is banks were pulling back and holding back on loans. So we as a city decided to create a multi-million-dollar loan fund. And now we've funded over 10 businesses, helped over 20 get started, created dozens and dozens of jobs by focusing on small minority business people who had the great ideas and the great initiative to start businesses. We've given them the technical expertise, and many of them have thrived during this bad economy, doing everything from opening up Subway franchises to opening up a pediatric dentistry has gotten off the grounds because where the banks were going away, we stepped forward with loans and capital to help people out.
We want to look at other ways that you've done that, tried to fight the tide. Newark's a heavily minority city. Nationally, black, African-American unemployment, you know, about 15% compared to 9% or something over the summer for whites. Do you see that? I mean, you've got 14% right there. So you're part of that picture. Do you feel it as a racial dynamic?
Well, look, we're a city that's about 80% black and Latino, so we certainly feel it as a city as a whole. I don't look at it normally through the guise of through the lens of race. I look at it that every single day we've got to get up and find a creative way of serving our residents, of finding hope, of finding opportunity, and never let our inability to do everything undermine our daily determination to do something. And there's so much we as Americans could be doing. We've had challenges before, from Great Depressions to World Wars, where people made sacrifices, from creating victory gardens to working together and setting up co-ops and other things that helped people through. And what I'm in awe of is our residents, be they black, Latino, Portuguese, Irish, are doing some incredible things to find hope within the darkness to light a candle as opposed to cursing it.
Has it made a difference to you, Mayor Booker, in Newark, New Jersey, to have a big city politician, African-American president in the White House? I don't know, atmospherically, practically, resource-wise, or not?
Well, there's definitely a spiritual boon to, I think, all Americans, be they black or white. In many ways, America reaffirmed its perhaps a boldest theme, that anything is possible in this nation. And so for kids in my schools to look up and see an African-American man as president of the United States, it belies the most negative, cynical streams in America and shows that the fountain of opportunity does spring eternal in the United States of America. So that was a tremendous spiritual boost for our city. But in a very practical way, I have a guy in the White House who's accessible to me. We had Secretary of HUD here in Newark, Sean Donovan. A few days ago, we had Arne Duncan here in the city of Newark visiting. We have a very accessible White House who knows that 80% of Americans live in cities or directly in their suburbs, and that you've got to change the narrative of American cities from places that are debtors, places that need to get aid, to really things that we can create an engine of economic opportunity. So when I talk to folks in the White House, it's not about, okay, how can I get money to fill a hole? It's more conversations like, hey, if we can get energy upgrade money to do retrofits for our city buildings, we can save taxpayers money. We can create jobs for our residents and job training that could last for careers. And we can improve our environment and deal with issues that people often don't talk about, like epidemic asthma rates in many urban areas. So these guys in the White House have just a different vision of trying to create a win-win-win for communities that also can empower us during a difficult economic time, but more importantly, plant the seeds for our future economic resurgence.
What does that look like? If you try and picture Newark, I mean, if Newark famously had the riots in 67. It was known as a very livable city, and then you had tremendous white flight and literally decades of, you know, some of the worst urban challenges in the country. You're still dealing with a lot of the aftermath of that. You're pushing hard on it, but it's still a tough town. You know, you're into transformation. If you could transform it, what would it look like on the other side? How does it get there? What's the possible vision?
Well, what people aren't noticing now is that Newark is transforming. I mean, we announced that the NCAA tournament is coming to the city of Newark. One of the largest poetry festivals in the United States is now coming to the city of Newark. I already told you about the population coming. Mm-hmm. But in our first luxury downtown living, almost 7 out of 10 of the people that live in those buildings are net new residents to the state of New Jersey. They're New Yorkers coming in. We built another dorm because we have 6 major colleges and universities expanding in our city. And suddenly we found NYU students living in Newark and commuting the 10 miles back into New York because it's cheaper and they can get more for their money. So we're a city that already is making that turn, and the economy has slowed our progress, but the future of Newark is exciting. I mean, I went down and was invited down by Valerie Jarrett to talk to her in her office because she couldn't understand why cities like Chicago and Detroit and others were going up in crime. But Newark, New Jersey, this mid-sized northeastern American city, was setting the standard in America for the number one city in a bad economy for reducing shootings and murders. Shootings are down 42% since I've been mayor. And we are accomplishing a lot of creative things by working with the private sector, with philanthropy and others, to create an environment that's safer and stronger. So for me, the future is clear. In fact, I tell people that people warn me that this job would beat down my optimism and my hope for what's possible. But if anything, it's been emboldened. I'm actually more hopeful now after 3 years in this job than I ever have been because of what practically is happening in the city of Newark. And it's not because we're shrinking from the larger problems. In fact, we've said, let's take a close examination at the most challenging issues in America and put our moral imagination to bear on those problems. And I'll give you one example. America's silent sin is the fact that the land of the free and the home of the brave imprisons more people than any other country on the planet. And we as taxpayers, people don't realize this, it's a drag on our economy, the billions we spend in the state of New Jersey alone, not to mention our nation, in just warehousing human capital. And so what we said is, what's happening to the guys that come out of prison that we have national recidivism rates at 65%? So we started innovating. We got the nation's first ever pro bono legal practice to help guys coming home from prison, because often what tangles them up and sends them back are technical parole violations. They don't have a driver's license. They have a warrant out for their arrest for a traffic violation in another town. So we're having incredible success. We're about to celebrate our 1,000th person served. And then we said, look at these guys that come out of prison that have children, they're fathers, and they're not living up to their obligations. And so we created a fraternity for men that come home that can voluntarily join. We call it Delta Alpha Delta Sigma Dads. And we give them marketability training. We partnered with Men's Warehouse to get them suits. And then we give them parenting classes and events. And we are blown away by the results we're having. It's one of the best programs in the country because the employment rate has shot up of guys getting jobs and holding them. But more importantly, the recidivism rate for this program is less than 3%. This program alone is saving the state of New Jersey millions of dollars. But the most powerful thing is the kids most likely to go to prison in America are children of incarcerated adults. And to see the men having these meaningful relationships with their children again is just encouraging. You know, I believe in America right now, even in the worst economy, because, by the way, in our greatest challenges of past, America's achieved some of its greatest things, from the Empire State Building to the Hoover Dam during the Great Depression to some of the most amazing acts of courage during World War II or the Civil Rights Movement are always shown during the darkest of nights. That's when you see the brightest lights in the sky. And so we believe in Newark that we can be the incubator in America for some great ideas about how to solve enduring problems. And that's what we're trying to put forth during this time of trial, not despair, but to show hope.
Cory Booker, a lot of attention with your sort of gold-plated background and then big push in Newark. Sundance Channel recently aired a documentary out of Newark called Brick City. Focusing on the work that's going on there to try and make it happen. Got a lot of your passionate speeches there, hope and optimism in there. But Hank Stover at the Washington Post, and I'm not here to rain on the parade, but he writes, Brick City's strongest impact comes from a never-ending supply of forlorn faces, slackened jaws, and weary eyes. I mean, you're fired up, but this clearly is not easy.
Well, it is not. And look, you know, when I came in, we had 106 murders in the city of Newark. Last year, we had 67, a dramatic reduction. But you know what? 67 people were killed. And that's something that you can't varnish over. You can't put a smiley face on. It is a painful reality in America that we have such high levels of gun violence and real families are impacted by this. So you can't be Pollyannish. You can't say that the sun is shining during a thunderstorm. But you have to make a decision. Mm-hmm. In the biggest of challenges, you have to make a choice. Are you, you know, as the old saying from Winston Churchill says, when you're going through hell, keep going. And so we're a city that's just not going to let that undermine us. I'll still remember the worst day of my life as mayor was when we had four college kids brought behind the school by some very evil people and shot execution style. Three died. One, thank God, survived.
Just months after you came into office.
Just months after I came into office. And I'll never forget the father who stood up at a press conference that had just about every camera in the country there. And he just looked passionately and said, this is not a time to point the fingers of blame. It's a time that we all step up and take responsibility. Do not let my child die in vain. Let's come together and do something about it. And so we didn't fall apart as a community. We took that charge and rallied together to do things that other cities weren't doing. In fact, right now, we have one of the nation's largest wireless networks for public safety hosting cameras and audio technology called ShotSpotter that can detect a gunshot within milliseconds, mm-hmm. all helping us do more dramatic reductions in crime. So I'm not going to say that there is not pain and problems and unemployment, but you have a choice every single day is to get up and say, I'm going to fight forward or I'm going to give up. And we are a city. They call us Brick City. It's not because of the architecture. It's because people in Newark are tough, they're hard, they're strong, they're resilient. And we're now proving that when we come together, there's nothing we can't build or create.
Mayor Cory Booker of Newark, New Jersey is with us in a few minutes. We should hear from Mayor Adrian Finty of Washington, D.C. Let's hear from our listeners. Tanya in Boston, you're on the air with Cory Booker. Mayor Booker.
Hi. It was exciting to turn on my radio and hear this program and hear some of the things that Mayor Booker was talking about. In terms of revitalizing cities and making them great places to be. I think my only thing I wanted to make sure got addressed was how do we do that when so often when that does happen, the city that ends up getting gentrified, and the people who have fewer resources and community of color are all pushed out of those centers.
That's a great question.
Great question, Mayor Booker. And with as a backdrop to Tanya's observation, this story, statistics out today from the Census Bureau finding the biggest inequality in the country in particularly large cities, Atlanta, Washington, New York, San Francisco, Miami, and Chicago. I don't know about Newark, but you hear her question and you read those statistics.
So, look, the only way to stop that from happening is to make it not happen. And we in the city have actually passed laws that are making sure that as development comes in, the opportunities fall first to Newark residents. So whether that's passing first source legislation, whether that's our new downtown neighborhood that's being created, you know, the first building around our new arena, we insisted to be an 80-20 building, 80% market rate, but 20% set aside for affordable. We're building another big building in our downtown that will be the same thing, 80-20. When we're working with unions in the city of Newark, we're ensuring that those unions even have residents in our city, starting apprenticeship programs and the like. It's a daily battle to make sure that when the Newark, New Jersey comes back, it comes back for everyone. And the benefit we have in the city is we're not sort of a landlocked city. We are a city that lost almost half its population. And we could use folks moving back as they are, bringing new resources and new economic dynamism. But we've got to make sure that we elevate everybody. And that's why the accomplishment I'm most proud of, in the city of Newark is that we have doubled the production in our city of affordable housing. And we've been able to partner with everyone from Oprah Winfrey to Jon Bon Jovi to get philanthropy towards creating special needs housing. And whether it's women recovering from drug addiction, we're creating an exciting project, or to people with AIDS, new housing that wasn't really focused on or built in the past, we want to make sure that as Newark comes back, it comes back for everyone in our city.
We're checking in on Urban America in the midst of deep recession with Mayor Cory Booker of Newark, New Jersey. And right now joining us from Washington, D.C., Mayor Adrian Fenty of Washington, D.C. Mayor Fenty, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Cory Booker,
how are you?
We're all great. And Cory Booker's here from Newark. He was saying earlier that it was like in the hot economy, it was like, you know, you could run like Usain Bolt when the money was flowing. And then suddenly you're running on a beach of deep sand. How did you first feel the economic downturn when it came to Washington, D.C., Mayor Fenty?
And just know, Adrian Fenty is the best running mayor of the United States of America. He's a marathoner.
Okay.
So he puts us all to shame.
What do you say, Mayor Fenty?
Let me just say hello to you both. Honored to be on with Mayor Booker, who's doing a fantastic job. What we've tried to do is really almost to just see this as a temporary setback, and you know, see light at the end of the tunnel. And we've really done a lot of investment in public projects during this time, like new recreation centers, new schools, renovating playgrounds.
Is that stimulus money?
Putting a little bit more subsidy into a private project so that activity still happens. And it's been successful because I feel like we're past the halfway point of this slowdown. Lights at the end of the tunnel. Private projects are starting to pick back up.
But, you know, nationally we've had, 9.5% leaning toward 10% unemployment. A lot of cities have had, well, so not, no small number, near double that. I'm not sure what Washington's is. I mean, how do you feel when you look out at the rest of the country and then look at your own unemployment, Mayor Fenty?
Yeah, Washington is about 11,
okay,
which is really, really high. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, D.C. is kind of like the New York area. A lot of the problems are certainly because of the slowdown in the economy. A lot of it is because people don't have the education and training. We actually have a lot of jobs still being created. But, like, you know, the disparity in the young people coming out of the high schools being qualified for those jobs. So we really do feel as fast as we can get young people trained and graduating from high school and maybe going beyond, then actually we'll be able to slow down that unemployment rate a lot better and faster also.
What do you need from the rest of the country, from your own people? I mean, if you and Mayor Booker sit down with each other or sit down in Washington with President Obama, what's at the top of your wish list first to you, Mayor Fenty?
I think it's about smart investment of resources. We have been very fortunate to get hundreds of millions of dollars from the Obama administration in a stimulus package, and we're putting them to good use, be it helping out transportation projects, et cetera. Some of it has gone for youth employment. The one thing I see as critical is cities being able to get more done for less. I was fortunate to inherit a city that for 8 years made really solid progress under Mayor Williams before me. And I think that that allows me to, we've got a really strong foundation. We should be able to, you know, learn from our past mistakes. I feel like we should know, okay, we don't need to invest our money there. That's a waste of time. And so I really do feel like even though there's been a slowdown, we can actually still improve productivity. And I know that that's the case in any city where there's been, you know, say 8 to 10 years of progress. And so that's kind of what we're hoping is just to spend the dollars more wisely.
Cory Booker, is there a new blueprint? And what would you put at the top of your priority list for President Obama if you sat with him? He invited you to run the Office of Urban Affairs. You said, no, thanks, I'll stay in Newark. But, you know, is there a new blueprint? And what do you need to make it happen?
Well, I think both Mayor Fenty and I are feeling that there is a new blueprint. And I love it. I mean, the Obama administration is not looking just to dump big block grants on cities. They're holding a new level of accountability and said, we're not looking at it as aid to cities anymore. We're looking to invest in our cities to create a 21st century economy. And so what Mayor Fenty was talking about is the kind of programs that they're funding are things that are going to have enduring impacts on our region. So for Newark is a transportation superstructure. So investments in our highways, in new rail links, investments even in our port area keeps us competitive as a nation in a global economy. Looking at evidence-based successes. I love what the Secretary of Education is basically saying to people. We're not going to fund it if it's not working. We're not going to take the peanut butter approach and just spread our dollars as far across the country as we can. We're going to put dollops where the resources are being invested in ways that are producing real results. So they're creating competitive funds like the Race to the Top Fund and other funds that reward innovation and, most importantly, reward results. So to me, as a mayor, and like Mayor Fenty is, that's nimble and that's working to try to create real change, you have a partner in Washington that wants to find what's working and invest in it, and that makes me very satisfied.
Let's get a call for the two of you from Jesse, calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Jesse, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for letting me come on. I am, well, it's an honor to speak to the two mayors. I'm an urban planner and a former community organizer here in the Boston area. So, like the two of you, presumably, I was quite excited by having an urban president and was really looking forward to sort of seeing what he did do. I know you just addressed this briefly, but I've been somewhat underwhelmed by, besides just the sort of short-term stimulus money that's come out of the Obama administration, you know, I haven't heard a peep out of this Office of Urban Policy. I don't even quite know who the director is these days. So I'm wondering from your perspective, what really has the Obama administration done the ground?
Mayor Fenty in Washington, D.C., to Jesse's question?
Yeah, it's really pretty dramatic. There's been a huge investment around jobs, a huge investment around the environment. We, for example, just in housing alone, the Obama administration proposed $20 million in housing, and we're going to use that if it gets through the Senate. For money that can go for to take homeless neighbors who would have gone to shelters and put them into housing, and it's everything from education to healthcare, and you can say, well, if they could do that without having the Office of Urban Affairs, but what we have found is that. Because there is an Office of Urban Affairs, they are making sure that these types of projects happen. They have a familiarity with a specific project, as Mayor Booker was saying, that other administrations just haven't been able to have. It's been more broad brush. And because of that, you know, I mean, we just had, for instance, First Lady come and do a really great announcement around a new open community market in D.C. And they know about issues on the ground, whether it's D.C., Newark, or Boston, that most White Houses probably wouldn't. And so I think there's, again, like I said before, the dollars are being better spent.
Let me ask you, Mayor Fenty, in Washington, what about when the stimulus money runs out? It was a lot of money. It goes on for a while. But on the other side of that, I mean, you got hundreds of millions. That's a lot of gas in the tank. What happens when that goes away?
Well, it was a significant investment, anywhere like $300 million for three consecutive years with the stimulus bill. You know, if necessary, I'm sure the president will revisit and see what needs to be done. The hope is that that's the bridge and the gap. It's been filling the gap from what we didn't get from this recession. So, you know, we've got to do our own on the local front. We've got to, as I keep saying, spend our dollars more wisely, get the private sector invested. One of the great things I know that Mayor Booker has done is, like, get the private sector to raise money to help build new parks, help build new recreational centers. Getting the private sector to step up to the plate is great, because then public dollars aren't spent, and then, of course, they're investing in jobs, and they're going to have a much more focus on, you know, the education and whether or not there's a great workforce coming out of the public schools. So look for us to do those two things. The money is here for at least the next couple of years. Hopefully by then the recession's over. If not, I'm sure we'll work closely with the White House on the next steps.
Mayor Booker, we're lucky to get both of you. It's a rare chance. I'd be interested in your question for your fellow Mayor Fenty, just down the way there in Washington. I mean, what would you ask him about where cities are going, his city, what's needed in this very tough economy we're in right now?
Well, I mean, first of all, the great thing about, you know, Mayor Fenty is his creativity, and he knows very well about his city's assets. And I was down there in D.C. recently. It's actually the city of my birth, and I have a lot of family and friends that still live in that area. And, you know, D.C. is becoming a model city in many ways. And what he's doing right now on education is really probably one of the most courageous stories of educational transformation going on in our country, as he and his superintendent of schools, Michelle Rhee, are not settling for the status quo, and they're not settling for incremental change.
Laying down some tough standards and taking some heed for that.
Yeah, but also just saying teachers need to change the profession. We cannot have American teachers treated like wage workers, paid a paltry sum to do the most important job in our country. We've got to increase their salaries, hold them to higher levels of accountability, and change a fundamental equation that most people wrongfully presume is right. You know, we live in a country where people think that time is a constant and achievement is a variable. Kids go to school the same amount of hours during the day, same amount of day, and these union contracts are down to the second that are negotiated. What Michelle Rhee and Adrian Fenty are saying, that we need to make achievement the constant and time the variable. If we need to expand the school day, expand the school week, expand the school year, whatever it takes, our children will learn. And so coming out of D.C. right now are some of the most innovative models of educational excellence, from the Seed School, which is a public dormitory school that's right there in Washington, D.C., to what Michelle Rhee is trying to do in transforming the profession and actually providing the resources to radically increase teacher salary in exchange for higher levels of accountability.
Mayor Fenty, we've just got you for 20 seconds more. Is the city coming around on that? There was some pushback when you and Michelle Rhee got tough with the schools and pulled in hard there. Are people warming up to it?
Without any question, I think politics has changed. I think people want mayors to make tough decisions. They're tired of mayors going with the special interests and the status quo. And again, I know Booker's doing the same on education up there, and I think people find inspiration in it. So glad to be a part of this movement.
Mayor Adrian Fenty in Washington, D.C., thank you for joining us today,
Mr.
Mayor.
Thank you both. I'll see you soon, Mayor Booker.
Take care now, Adrian.
First talked with Cory Booker just before he was elected mayor of Newark, New Jersey. He's got kind of a platinum background here, Stanford, Yale Law School, Rhodes Scholar, maybe some big future for this mayor of Newark, New Jersey, but he's got big challenges in front of him right now, there as do mayors right around the country. Let's get a couple of calls here on the crime front. First, Waterloo, Iowa. Peter, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thank you so much for taking my call, first of all. In Waterloo here, our crime rate in the last 8 or 12 months, I suppose, has just skyrocketed. We had some devastating flooding a little over a year ago, and now we're seeing lots and lots of armed robberies and, you know, convenience stores and gas stations getting held up. And it seems to me that the younger generation, the high school-age kids or even younger, are offered programs to you know, help them train for jobs, help them graduate from high school. But I don't see any interest. I don't think any of these kids care about that. I think they care more about, you know, being able to make a quick buck on the corner.
Or, do you think it's recession or a bigger cultural issue, Peter?
You know, I think it's a little combination of both. You know, you see some on the news, the guy that robs the check cashing place is a white male in his late 30s, early 40s. But, you know, you see outside of my work, there's, you know, 13 or 14-year-old kids, 10 or 12 of them running around throwing rocks at people. And just, you know, you tell them to get out of there and, you know, they look at you like they want to fight you.
And that horrible scene this week from Chicago of the young honor student beaten to death just outside school there. Peter, we'll pick that up with Mayor Cory Booker. Let me get one more call here first from Sumter, South Carolina. Jeanette, you're on the air with Mayor Booker.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Mayor Booker, I'm originally from East Orange, New Jersey, and I lived in Jersey from New York for 35 years, and I moved down here on account of the weather, on account of the fact there was just so much crime going on up there. But anyway, I wrote him a letter. I congratulated him. I think he's a wonderful, wonderful, very intelligent person. And what he needs to do, the main thing, is that police department. I had to appear for a traffic ticket one day, and the police officers in there, they were handshaking and backslapping and dreadlocks and what. I said, no, they did not look like police officers. They look like the same ones that hang around Market Street, you understand, except that they had the uniform. They do not take their job as serious as they supposed to take it seriously for the simple reason you have to look like authority and be authority, you understand. When you can control those kids in the street, then you're going to have less problems with murder and whatever is going on in Newark. So I can't go to the other subjects. So I don't want to take too long, but I still want to congratulate on him on taking that job, period.
Jeanette, we got your kudos and your question for Mayor Cory Booker. Mayor Booker, you hear it there first. Peter in Waterloo saying they got skyrocketing crime there since flood and recession, and a youth kind of culture question in the middle of it. And then Jeanette wondering about your police department right there in Newark, and if it's got the right culture to beat crime.
Well, again, every community has their own individual sort of elements that, mm-hmm. that should inform a strategy. We believe in intelligent policing here in Newark, studying the problem, and it's actually more of a science than I ever imagined before I got into this job. And we've had a lot of successes because we've been able to really understand the nature of our problem and meet it on its own terms. And so just the simple equation I always tell people is to stop crime, you've got to have discipline and love. And the discipline is unapologetic, aggressive, yet appropriate policing, letting people know what things are not going to be allowed in their community. We started with quality of life enforcement. We had tremendous community complaints around everything from open air drinking to even public urination. And we just said, we're not going to tolerate those kind of things. And we're going to begin to enforce crime at every level. And then we had to take a reality check on our own department. You know, we had the majority of our police officers on during the daytime shift when the majority of crime happened during the two nighttime shifts. Mm-hmm. We even had detectives in our gang task force working Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. And I don't know about Waterloo, but in Newark, gangs right. don't work Monday through Friday, 9
right.
to 5.
Right.
So we started coming at it hard and aggressive, and I told everybody in the city this is a number one issue, so everybody needs to step up. As Adrian Fenty mentioned, I told the private sector, I need your help. Every foundation, I need your help. And we were able to get tremendous cooperation. We're the only city in America now, for example, with gun violence. If you know there's somebody with a gun in your neighborhood or even suspect it, call anonymous tip line. We don't want to know who you are, but you just call. You get a code. If you call back and we recovered that gun and we've done it within 6 minutes, we'll give you another code and you can go to 4 banks in our city or even send somebody and get $1,000, no question asked.
Wow.
So that's all funded by philanthropy. We wanted to get everybody together on one focused laser beam about the most important obligation government has in America, which is the protection and preservation of human life and safety and security. And then the second part, though, of that equation mm-hmm. is very important. It's love. Children respond to love. Let them know what the boundaries are, and if they cross them, there will be consequences, because if a child does something and there's no consequence, you only encourage that behavior. But you've got to provide nurturing. You've got to provide love. And anybody who wants to complain about a problem with young people who is not being a coach, a mentor, mm-hmm. a tutor, every one of us. There's a waiting list in Newark and New Jersey for mentors to the hundreds of people, and yet it only takes you 4 hours a month to be a mentor. So I challenge anybody who wants to complain about the youth in America to first look in the mirror and say, what am I doing about it? And then confess to yourself, I'm here today because someone coached me, someone was there after school for me, someone acted as a mentor that was not my blood relative, and what are you doing to make the community a better place?
How does that go down with your constituents, Mayor Booker? You hear Jeanette, she's in South Carolina now. She left in part because of the crime. I mean, do people who've been through that roll their eyes when you talk love, or do they say, yep?
No, I mean, I think people get it, that we are coming after the problem like never before. I mean, we again have a reduction in shootings and murders to the level that no other city's really achieving right now in terms of over a three-year period. So people see that we're working on the problem, that we're not playing around. I myself was rolling around in police cars in 2008 from 10 p.m. to 4 a.m. in the morning.
With your security detail and jumping out and kind of collaring drug dealers, if I'm reading.
And still, my security detail started collaring me and telling me if I kept doing that, they would shoot me despite the statistics in the city. But yeah, I let people know that I as mayor was not going to tolerate what was going on, and I was going to do everything. In fact, we're challenging our residents right now in the month of October to come out with me again. We're going to do community caravans late at night. We're taking back our streets. And even though we've made progress, I again want to have Newark, New Jersey continue to be at the top in the nation as an example. So we're challenging our residents to, if you want results that other people aren't having, you've got to be willing to do the things that other people don't do. And we as a nation have shown time and time again that when problems are happening, if we show the courage, whether it's storming beaches in Normandy or getting on freedom rides or organizing against sweatshops and child labor, that we can create radical transformation in our country. So why have we in the modern era started to resign ourselves to problems where all we can do is think that democracy is a spectator sport? Well, it's not. It's a full contact participatory endeavor. And if you're not in the game, then you are partly responsible for what's going on in your community.
But what do you do for the really big waves that sweep through? We've all seen the photos of Time Magazine is giving Detroit a lot of attention now, as if it hasn't had attention already for, you know, a whole industry that's kind of that's been knocked so far down, and Detroit paying a price for that. I mean, who can stand up against that sort of giant, you know, typhoon? What do cities do in that case when whole industries go away, manufacturing sectors?
So it all starts from what I said before. You cannot let your inability to do everything undermine your determination to do something. Newark had the same thing that happened. Insurance companies were leaving in droves, incredible flight from our city. We saw that same thing here, and we had to think creatively. There's a wonderful professor in Boston at Harvard named Michael Porter, who's sort of patterned a new vision for American cities, where he says every city has a competitive advantage, and you've got to think creatively about what that is and then leverage that competitive advantage to your benefit. And we saw that here in Newark. We knew that our competitive advantage was our port area, and we started strategies that are expanding our port. We knew that our competitive advantage was arts and culture, that drives actually economic investment. And we built, when people said it couldn't be done, a performing arts center, an arena, and other things that are now driving millions of people back into our city for opportunity. My family, again, my mom's family is from Detroit. Mm. My grandfather got a job on the assembly lines back in the 30s and 40s and became a union organizer. And that was a city, yes, it was built by the automotive industry. But Detroit still is a strong city even without the automotive industry, but they have to think creatively, and I know they are from some of the leaders out there. In fact, they recently opened up a movie studio to show that you can do films there at a cheaper cost. There's always something. Problems are just tests to the moral imagination of a people, and if you surrender to paralysis or hopelessness, then you're never going to get out of it. But if you start thinking creatively and start with something, instead of staring at the steps, begin to step up the stairs, and one foot after another, you're going to get to your destination.
Listeners, take notes. There's a formula in here. Chris in Providence, Rhode Island, you're on the air with Mayor Booker.
Yeah, hello. Hi, Tom. Hello, Mayor Booker.
Hello.
I salute your positive attitude and your efforts, and I wish you luck with it, and all of us luck with it. My question is, I haven't heard much or anything about drug use, and it seems to me that drug use is really central. In Providence, I work in a neighborhood that's crawling with drug addicts and drug dealers, and it's like, I'm surprised at how little I hear about it from politicians in general, and the question is, how much of it is a symptom of these problems, and how much of it is a cause? And do you have any strategy? Certainly, you know, keeping young people away from drugs certainly is a strategy. All this stuff ties in. But specifically, you know, imprisonment seems to be the cure is almost as bad as the disease. And it just seems like it's at a scale that's, from, you know, it seems like it's one of the central issues.
Yep. Thanks, Chris. Mayor Booker, what do you say?
Yeah, he's right. Drugs drives crime. And the majority of our murders, in fact, revolve around the narcotics trade. And so we have taken that on as a strategy. And again, there's a law enforcement that's a disciplined manner, and we're doing so much more sophisticated efforts to undermine narcotics dealing. We're doing a bigger, bolder cooperation with the feds, the DEA. We've created a force multiplier in our efforts, and that's one of the reasons why we've driven down crime. But the part that he's talking about is something we as Americans need to recognize. Drug addiction is a disease and needs to be treated that way. And I did mention earlier in our conversations about creating housing for people going through treatment. And working with a lot of our drug treatment organizations here in the city of Newark to create a more comprehensive network of service to empower people who are suffering from that disease to make better choices. So again, we're going to create consequences for certain behaviors, but we're not going to be crazy enough not to realize that we need detox beds. We need drug treatment programs. We need programs that then empower people once they've come out of treatment that they can turn their lives around. And frankly, on a national level, and I know here in the state of New Jersey, we need to begin to change, I think the technical term of these laws is called stupid laws, that begin to continuously punish people throughout their lives for nonviolent drug offenses. You know, I had a guy sitting in my office who was complaining to me that he couldn't get a taxi cab license in the state of New Jersey because back in 1986, he was convicted of a nonviolent drug offense. That's ridiculous. Why are we going to take away people's means for empowering themselves and their families economically because of nonviolent drug offenses in their past? And there's laws in every single state that need to be changed. And while politician like myself after politician are lining up to show how tough they are on crime, we need to reexamine these laws that in many ways are perpetuating our problems.
Mayor Cory Booker of Newark, New Jersey. Jim, in Boston, you're on the air with Mayor Booker.
Hi. I've heard a lot of talk about government infusion of cash to prop up what's ailing us at the current time. And I've heard a lot of good conversation about building affordable homes and doing things that will keep people in the city. But this has been aimed at people who are economically challenged. My concern is long-term, the health of the city requires a balance of socioeconomic residents, people who make a lot of money, who pay a lot of taxes. If we have a city of residents, and mayors know this very well, where there's a net cost to each resident because when you compare what they pay in taxes to city services such as education, it's a net loss to the city. We need people who are childless and wealthy, too. I don't hear much talk about crafting policies that would enable or discourage a flight of the moneyed class from the city, such as we heard this week in New York City, where New York City apparently enacted a special tax on the wealthy, and a couple of high-profile wealthy people announced that their new homes will be Florida.
Jim, our time grows short. Let us look at it. Mayor Booker, there was a lot of talk not long ago about people moving back into cities for sort of green period or boomers who wanted to be back in city centers. Now, I don't know if that works for a city like Newark or not, but you mentioned luxury downtown living earlier. How do you look at this, the mix of income levels in a city like Newark with tough challenges?
No, he's right. And thank God Newark is seeing that benefit still, because people want to be in cultural centers. People don't want to drive anymore 2 hours to work. People want to be on transit lines. People want to live where they can roll out of bed in Newark and be in New York City in 20 minutes and then be able to commute back and have a lot more for their money. So we're seeing, you know, Newark has a lot of strong neighborhoods with almost mansion-like homes in them that are now being bought up by people who see the benefit of living in our city and the benefit of urban living. And that's definitely one of our strategies. We want to have everybody here in the city of Newark. And just to his point about childless people, I've been trying to pass legislation to help childless single elected officials in our city, but my city council won't let me do it.
That would be you.
That would be me, yes.
So you're 3 years in. What's your commitment here? Are you down for another term or worn out as you go toward 3-1?
Well, I've definitely aged a lot in the job, but I feel like I've got the luckiest. I'm the luckiest man in the world. I feel like I've got the best job in America. Every day I get up and feel passionate and enthused about serving a city and see so many heroes that are doing things that just would shock you. I mean, we're about to give an award to a guy who gets up every day. He's a retired guy, but he bought a lawnmower and he mows the lawn on the median by a park just because he said, this is my community. I'm going to do this every single day, mows the lawn or sweeps up. So this is a job that I love. I'm running for re-election next year. I'm going to stick with it because I know in 5 years from now, one of the greatest stories in America will be the story of the resurgence of Newark, New Jersey. And we're seeing that on everything from population growth to crime reduction in the city of Newark. We have hard, hard times affecting this entire nation. But these are the kind of hard times that forge the best of the American spirit. And I know that we as a country may be down now, but our best days are ahead of us.
You put it about as well as it could be put. Are your constituents keeping up with you on that high road rhetoric, Mayor Booker? Are they rah-rah or like, oh boy, here goes Corey?
I think I'm trying to keep up with many of my constituents who are setting the pace.
Good. Mayor Corey Booker of Newark, New Jersey. Mr. Mayor, thank you very much for joining us today.
Tom, thank you for having me.
And thanks very much as well to Mayor Adrian Fenty of Washington, D.C., who joined us earlier. Listeners, thanks for being here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.